This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
A detective read a script in a Los Angeles courtroom. A shovel ordered through Postmates. Interesting. Delivered to a home on Doheny Drive on April 24th, 2025. According to the prosecution, Celeste Rivas Hernandez had been dead for less than 24 hours at that point. The man who allegedly ordered that shovel had a radio interview scheduled for later that day. Can't miss the radio morning zoo, right? Oh, it's a wacky 7 o'clock in the morning. Sunshine today, 74. Oh, look at this. It's David. David, what's going on in your world?
I just murdered somebody last night.
Hey, birthday's coming up at 7:45. You murdered somebody. Wow, that's wild and wacky stuff. David.
My songs are all about death.
Hey, that's true. Have you tried the donuts here at the Rick's Breaks and More studio? Oh my God. Rick's Breaks and More is our title sponsor of our studio. So the Rick's Breaks and More studio is where we're at. And oh my God, these donuts. So you tell me more about what you like to do during the day.
I'd like to dismember people.
Oh, hey. 7:48. We're going to take a look at your 7-day forecast coming up next.
It's how radio interviews go, right? You know?
Anyway. David. And digress. Allegedly took the life of a child and then did a radio interview the next morning. Promote the album. He had the album release party that night, too. So he does his radio interview. And then he goes out and promotes an album. Yeah. At the 100 Thieves compound. His debut studio album dropped next day. It was called Withered. It debuted at number 13 on the Billboard 200. His name, you've probably heard of him now, David Anthony Burke. You've seen the D4VD and was like, what? Deforded? Deforvid? What? It's pronounced David. The music industry, like I said, knows him as David. And according to prosecutors in Los Angeles County, he allegedly stabbed a 14-year-old girl to death the night before that shovel arrived. Interesting thing to order through Postmates, right? Context, eh? That's for day one of the preliminary hearing for David started. Not with opening arguments, not with motions. With a Postmates receipt for a shovel and an album release party on the same calendar day. But before we get to the full purchase timeline that LAPD robbery homicide detective Joshua Byers laid out under oath, there are three things to keep in mind. First, Burke's iPhone was registered in the Tesla's Bluetooth system under a name. It wasn't under not David, not D4VD, a different name. What investigators found that device connected to and the date it last connected matters. That comes a little bit later. It's new evidence in this case. Second, when detectives booked Burke in April of 2026, they photographed two tattoos on his hands, one of them matching a marking found on Celeste's body. What those booking photos did to the people sitting in the courtroom on July 21st is part of the story. And third, after the body was found in September of 25, the people closest to Burke's money stopped communicating on regular phones. Who made that decision? And what they were moving while they made it is also part the prosecution wanted the courtroom to simmer with this week in the biggest developments in the David case so far. As we work our way through this, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. And be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening and watching if you want full, complete coverage of this case. We got it for you. Celeste's parents were in the room, Jesus Rivas and Mercedes Martinez. Before the detective took the stand, they were offered the chance to leave. They were told the testimony would be graphic. They stayed. And when prosecutors displayed evidence photos, including images of Celeste's hand, a spectator had to fan her mother to keep her from fainting. Burke sat a few feet away. He'd been brought in wearing orange, shackled to a chair. The defense got his handcuffs removed, so shackles stayed, and according to reporters inside the courtroom, he showed no visible reaction to any of it. He leaned back, whispered to his attorney, Blair Burke. The word Fox 11 courtroom reporter used was nonchalant. Same room, same photographs, one person looking at what allegedly happened to her daughter. And they're watching the same evidence the way you'd watch a meeting you already prepared for, because maybe you've already seen the contents. And if the allegations are correct, he's seen them very close up. The audience that follows this case already knows the broad strokes of what Burke allegedly purchased in the weeks after Celeste's death. The chainsaws, the inflatable pool, the body bag, the burn cage. We've covered it. What came under oath July 21st is the part that hasn't been public. The fake names didn't work. According to Detective Byers, Burke allegedly placed orders under the names Trevon Davis and Victoria Mendez. We've heard the Mendez. The Trevon Davis is a new one. He used an Amazon account tied to Trevon D email address. But he paid with his own cards because he's a genius. Had the items delivered to his own address on Doheny Drive. The aliases were strictly cosmetic. The financial trail ran straight back to him, and the detective walked the courtroom through every receipt that proved it. This is what happens with criminals, especially young criminals. They think they're smart. If I put it under a different name, well, I can say in a courtroom that it's for Trevon Davis or Victoria Mendez. No one's going to connect the dots. That's through my Amazon account on my cards. You know, you could put it to Mickey Mouse as well, David, and it's still going to be connected back to you. It doesn't matter, you fucking idiot. But you're so profound with your sad songs and lyrics of profound loss and shit, and you really have no concept of what you're even writing about or talking about. You're just a monster is what you are. But aren't you poetic? One detail surfaced for the first time during the hearing. The cadaver bag Burke allegedly ordered was labeled City Morgue. An Amazon purchase under a fake name delivered to his door. That's nice. You can buy this on Amazon. We've looked it up. You can buy body bags on Amazon. I know. After Kmart shut down and they weren't selling him with the blue light specials anymore behind the deli, it was like, well, where do we sell these now, Bill? Well, Amazon, I guess. And the sequence of the purchases tells its own story. The shovel came the day after she allegedly died, April 24th. The chainsaws and the body bags, early May, week or two later. Might need some extra coverage here. I know, let's get some chainsaws. And a birdcage came in July, the at-home crematorium kit. 3 months after that, each item allegedly represents a different plan for what to do with a body that, according to investigators, was still inside the Tesla the entire time. A shovel first, then power tools, then a morgue bag, then a cage designed to incinerate animals. Not a plan, a series of alleged plans, each one apparently replacing the last. None of them completed. It's almost like Michael Scott trying to hide a body. It's kind of what it feels. It feels like this. If you had Michael Scott and Dwight Schrute planning this out, it would be around the same level of intelligence that David exercised here. The prosecutors went backwards 14 months before Celeste allegedly walked into Burke's Hollywood Hills house for the first time. It would have been February 17th of 2024. A sheriff's deputy knocked on the door because Riverside County had a missing persons report. A 13-year-old girl, her parents couldn't find her. The body camera footage from that encounter played in open court, and Burke told the deputy he'd met Celeste once at the beach. Said they connected on Discord between 2020 and 2021. He said she told him she was 18. The deputy showed him yearbook photos. She was 13. According to prosecutors, the relationship had already been going on for over a year at that point. Burke allegedly looked at law enforcement and an officer, looked at the yearbook photos of a child whose family had filed a missing persons report and said he barely knew her. Allegedly claimed she told him she was a legal adult. She was in seventh grade. And he knew it. That footage is evidence now. It was shown to a courtroom full of people. It is significant. And it's not just significant because of what Burke said. It's that the system took his word for it, too. Deputies left. No arrest, no follow-up. Investigation that stopped what allegedly, or no investigation or follow-up that would stop what allegedly happened next. A welfare check that checked really nothing. Oh, you say you're, oh, okay, we think there might be something. But you say that? Oh, okay, bye. Have a nice day. Our child protective service system at work. Then the hearing shifted to the money. Prosecutors called Benjamin Greger to the stand. He was Burke's former finance director at Mogul Vision, the management company that ran Burke's career. Greger brought his own lawyer, and that detail alone tells you something about what this testimony was going to cover. Greger testified that Burke generated an estimated $10 million to $11 million in gross income between 2023 and 2025. That included a $600,000 signing payment from Interscope Records, roughly $2.4 million during the first year after signing, multi-million dollar advances through publishing and merchandise entities. Burke also operated multiple business entities. The prosecution's argument is straightforward. That career was what Burke allegedly needed to protect. 14-year-old allegedly threatening to expose their relationship was allegedly the threat to all of it. And it had to be eliminated. But the financial testimony didn't stop in motive. It went somewhere we really haven't gone yet. Greger testified that after Celeste's remains were discovered in September of 25, communications within Burke's management team changed. That's interesting. Conversations between Robert Morgrant, Burke's mother, Colleen Burke, and others moved to encrypted messaging apps for some reason. Signal, WhatsApp. Greger said the switch wasn't his decision. Someone else in the circle requested it. He didn't say who. He said the reason given was to avoid leaks to the media. That's the explanation. But prosecutors believe that explanation is really kind of about a different question altogether. Greger also testified about what happened to Burke's money after the investigation went public. He described discussing about moving funds from a Morgan Stanley trust account with roughly $2 million. He described conversations about transferring the titles of Burke's property into his mother's name. When prosecutor Beth Silverman asked whether that transfer was intended to shield the properties and potential civil claims by Celeste's family, Greger said he didn't recall making that statement. Silverman pointed out that Greger has said precisely that during prior grand jury testimony, Greger's memory apparently failed him on the stand. But he did remember one thing clearly. He's still on the payroll. $7,500 monthly retainer working with Colleen Burke to find a new entertainment lawyer for her son. David Burke is incarcerated. He faces first-degree murder charges with special circumstances. He faces potential death penalty consideration. The finance machine that runs his career is still running at $7,500 a month, looking for the next lawyer who will take his call. Digital Forensics filled in the last piece. Burke's iPhone, the one registered in the Tesla system, was listed under his the name Tranquilizer, not his legal name, not his stage name. Tranquilizer is his phone name. And that device was last connected to the Tesla's Bluetooth on July 29th of 2025. That date's significant. Store receipts and surveillance video from that same day show Burke allegedly driving the vehicle, parking it near his home on Bluebird Avenue, and then walking back through an alley. He left Los Angeles on a concert tour. The Tesla sat on the street. What could possibly go wrong there? For 6 weeks, with Celeste's remains allegedly inside. Until September 8th, when a tow yard worker pulled the car in and smelled something that made him call the police. That's what the prosecution laid out. Now, here, my friends, is what the defense did with it. Blair Burke's cross-examination didn't contest the purchases. She didn't argue that Burke hadn't ordered the items. She didn't challenge the aliases. Excuse me, it's allergy season. She attacked the investigation itself. Every question she asked was designed to put doubt on how evidence was collected, preserved, and tested. She had material to work with, too. Burke asked why the cadaver bag wasn't preserved as evidence. Byers testified that the bag was too decomposed. He said he consulted with a supervisor and a criminalist, and they determined it was impractical to keep the whole thing. They removed the handles and the zipper for forensic testing. The rest of the bag was not fingerprinted, not swabbed, and not preserved. Burke asked why the burn cage wasn't tested or collected during the September 25 search of Burke's home. Buyer said it was photographed but not taken. Then the chainsaws. Three chainsaws were recovered from Burke's home, two in the garage, one on the second floor. Three were tested for blood. All three came back negative. When Burke asked whether investigators conducted DNA testing or compared the chainsaws to the cut marks found on the remains, Byer said he did not recall any DNA testing. He testified that investigators did not pursue additional forensic analysis after the initial blood tests came back clean. Burke also challenged the scene itself. No official sign-in log was kept for officers entering Burke's home. Three different law enforcement units responded before criminalists arrived to process the scene. And the defense raised a blue iPhone 15 recovered from the residence. Burke argued the phone may have belonged to Celeste, not Burke. She pointed to a search warrant affidavit that linked the device to an email address associated with Celeste. The exchange got heated enough that the judge told both sides to move on. Again, this is a case where, and in any case, the investigative moves are so critical. Cross every T, dot every I. Don't mess it up. Because this is what a defense attorney is going to do when they have nowhere else to go. Attack the investigation itself. Poke holes. Create reasonable doubt in the way the evidence was gathered, the way the investigation went about, and hope to God the juror, you have a juror, or the whole jury at some point goes, yeah, there's too many holes over here. You didn't do your job good enough. So that somehow magically means you didn't do this, despite this mountain of evidence over here. That's the goal in a case like this, where the evidence is pretty damning. The strategy is visible. Burke isn't fighting the receipt. She's fighting the chain of custody. She's arguing that the people who collected the evidence may not have done it carefully enough for a jury to trust. You can't undo a Postmates receipt for a shovel delivered the day after someone allegedly died, though. You can't explain away ordering a bag labeled City Morgue under a fake name. So you argue the chainsaws tested clean. You argue the cadaver bag was destroyed before it could be fully examined. You argue three deputies or departments walked through the scene before anyone started documenting who was there. It signals something specific about where the defense thinks this case stands. They're not contesting what happened. They know they're kind of effed there. They're contesting whether the investigation can prove it to a jury's standard. The hearing continues over multiple days. Probable cause is the low bar. Former prosecutors who followed this case expect the judge to hold Burke over for trial. What happened on day one wasn't procedural. It was the first time anyone sat in a room and had to answer for the receipts, the aliases, the money, and the silence that followed. A prosecutor showed the booking photos from Burke's April 26 arrest. The courtroom saw what detectives hadn't identified before that day. On Burke's left ring finger, a tattoo. Celeste's name. In faint red ink. On his right index finger, the word shh. Same word Celeste had tattooed on her own finger. Matching ink. The two with the same word on their hands. One was 21-year-old with $10 million, a world tour, an album on the Billboard charts, and a legal team. The other was a 14-year-old from Lake Elsinore who weighed 71 pounds when the medical examiner received her remains. She still had braces. What a love story that is. We'll continue to give you updates as the hearings continue. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage of this story. We will be following it through its entirety. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Love for you to weigh in. Until next time, my name's Tony Bruschi. Be sure to hit the subscribe button before you forget. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.